Everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabel, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 80 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on Hell's Kitchen when we come back. You know, those who already walk submissively will say that there's no cause for alarm, but submissiveness is not our heritage. The First Amendment was designed to allow rebellion to remain as our heritage, and the Constitution was designed to keep government off the backs of the people. The Bill of Rights was added to keep the precincts of belief and of expression of the press, of political and social activities, free from government surveillance. You know, I wished I'd have thought of that, but that quotation comes from Supreme Court Justice William O. Douglas. Now, our princes and politicians beller in the halls of Congress for more taxes, more spending, more gun control, but you and I haven't heard anything intelligent come out of a politician's mouth in more than 75 years now, have we? That's why I contend that the only real reason, logic, or common sense left in America comes from our courts, not from our political process or our politicians, lawyers, or bureaucrats. Old Mayor Rothschild summed it up with a flair, I think, when he said, "You give me the money power, and I care not who makes the laws." Well, let me echo that by saying, "You give me the judicial power, and I care not who makes the laws either." Because the real power in America is in our courts, it's not in our politics. Now, if you'd like to tap into that power of the courts, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for my free general law CD package while you're at it. It's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. And courtroom strategy and procedure, our school is available on compact disc for adult home education. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website. It's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send me an email request for that same free general law CD package. And once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. Hell's Kitchen is a book written by our old friend Joel Wallach. Joel Wallach, remember, is the veterinarian that suggests that you put a mineral block on your dining room table, and then when you walk by it, just lean over and lick on it a little bit and then go about your business. Sounds a little crass, sounds a little crude. It's the truth, and oftentimes truth is stranger than fiction. It's kind of like Ripley's Believe It or Not. But there's got to be a reason why Americans are so sick. I mean, we're the sickest nation in the world, with the best medical service and the best medical practice in the world. And I guess it makes sense. You know, when you're sick, you got to have a doctor, and so the doctor has to get trained somewhere. And he can't get trained in a better place than in America, which has the sickest population in the world. Now, 1917, a phenomenon occurred. 1917, this is World War I now. And young men being drafted into the Army here in the United States would go through a physical, and they found out that 60% of Americans were healthy. They take 100 young American men in, and they'd give them a physical. 60 of them were healthy. 40 of them had symptoms of something. Now, this is in 1917, you know, nearly 100 years ago, 90 years ago at least. Now, the good news was 60% of us were healthy. 40% of us were unhealthy, at least to some degree. And from that point on, it has gone downhill from there. I mean, this is all downhill. Today, 99% of Americans have symptoms. Only 1% of us are symptom-free. We wear glasses, we have hearing aids, we have allergies, diabetes, Parkinson's disease, muscular dystrophy. There's a book called The Physician's Desk Reference, and it describes all of these symptoms that you have. It's about 450 symptoms. So when you go into the doctor and he says, hold your hand out, and it shakes, right away he says, okay, well, you've got the shaking disease. Let's see, what is that? That's probably Parkinson's. So he looks that up, he gives you some tests, he comes back and says, yes, yes, you have Parkinson's disease, which is like a death sentence, but it's at least it makes you feel good to know that it's something that's recognizable, that other people have it, and that there's a regime, there's a protocol, there's a treatment for it. Whether the treatment's effective or not is another story, but then, you know, as long as you got money, we got treatment. So we can identify and we label and then we copyright and patent these disease symptoms. Like cancer is a copyrighted trade name. And the American Medical Association, and beriberi, Hansen's disease. All of these diseases are copyrighted. Pharmaceutical companies oftentimes hold patents on drugs or maybe on the name of the disease itself. And it's big business. I mean, we're talking about, you know, multiple hundreds of billions of dollars a year in sales in clinics and hospitals and doctor's offices and drug stores and pharmaceutical companies and so on. Disease is big business. Makes lots of money. In fact, it's the biggest single industry in the United States. So you take a look at our gross domestic product, and I think it was last time I saw this, some numbers about $13 trillion a year. Well, 16% of that $13 trillion a year, which is a, take 13 times 0.16, that's 2.08 trillion. So it's $2 trillion a year. And they tell us that by the year 2012, it's going to be 20% of the gross domestic product. 20 cents out of every dollar spent in America is going to be on some form of medical services in the next 4 years or so. Now, that's sick. That's sick. That's no pun intended. Just, you know, Americans are sick people. 1% of us are healthy. 99% of us are sick. Now, this is the best country in the world to get sick in because we got the best medical services available in the world. I mean, if the average guy in the world had diseases like we have in America, he'd die. Here in America, you can have AIDS, and they've got this new cocktail out here. Now they can treat you and keep you alive for an extra 10 years or so. When you've got AIDS, it's a fatal disease. It's always been fatal. It's still fatal. But instead of dying in 3 or 4 years, you're going to die in 13 or 14 years. Isn't that good news? Now, a guy named Joel Wallach comes along, and he says, dead doctors don't lie. And he put out a tape. It was really funny. And in his tape, he says, dead doctors don't lie. They died age 58 on average. Medical doctors in America live to be 58. The rest of us live to be 75. And so he asked the question. He says, if these guys are so damn smart, how come they die so young? And he took a lot of flack from the medical community. They first of all, they said, you're a liar. And he was. He had originally said that they died at age 59, I think. And they did a study, and they found it was age 58. And so he changed his number from 59 to 58 or something like that. So the moral to the story is that the people that we go to cure us of all of these diseases themselves are short-lived people. Now, Wallach has it in his head that you should live to be 100. And he has a chapter or two in here where he tells the stories about the Hunzas, you know, over in the Himalayas and the various people around the world. You've probably heard of them. You know, there's little groups of people around the world that live to be 100 with greater frequency than the rest of the people in the world. And so they come to the conclusion that all of us have the potential to live to be 100 or 120 or 30 or something like that. There are some documented examples of people that have lived to be 120 or 30. In fact, you know, the Guinness World Book of Records. They just had a woman in here the other day I heard about, died at age 122. She's died here a few years ago. And then one in Iran, 160-some years old. Been several accounts over in Russia in various isolated spots, 160 years old. And, I mean, in modern times. We're not talking about biblical times. I'm just talking about, you know, modern times. Now, you can sit there and say, well, I don't believe that. Well, you know, Bob Hope lived to be 100. George Burns lived to be 100. I'd like to be 100. And I'm sure that you'd probably like to be 100, too. Now, the Bible tells us that we're guaranteed. You know, if we practice the Ten Commandments, we're guaranteed 70 years. That's 80 if you're strong. So it is common to fit into that mold of 75 being the average. Doctors don't fit into that mold, but ordinary people do. So if you want to live to be 75 or 80, you know, that's certainly within the parameters of your genetic makeup. I'm not going to go so far as to say you should live to be 100 or so. I'll leave that to other people and make up your own mind. But Wallach comes along here and he writes a hell of a book, hell of a book. In fact, I'm going to grade this one 1 in 100. It's a health book. And there's hundreds of health books out there. I mean, I've never seen any subject that is more saturated with propaganda than health. And yet, I can tell you, you've never read a book like this, and you'll never read another one again. This guy has got something going for him. I don't know quite what it is. You know, it's kind of like, you know, Samuel Clemens, you know, they call him Mark Twain. He had a writing skill, a writing talent. He had a story-making ability, an ability to tell a story that nobody else had. And because of that, he could write a book, and it's just different than everybody else's. That's why when Mark Twain would make a statement, you know, the one time he said, the current reports of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. I guess somebody must have said Mark Twain died, and he came back with this little wise old saying. He said, the reports of my demise have been greatly exaggerated. And that's the kind of thing that Joel Wallach has. It's just a little talent here that he's got that nobody else has got. And so I'm going to give you a report here on this Hell's Kitchen. You know, 5 or 6 chapters of it. You know, we'll go through and we'll read a little bit of it, and I'll tell you something. And I'll tell you the thrust of the book right off the top of my head here. It is, the reason that we're sick in America is because we have nutritional deficiency, which is caused by Hell's Kitchen, the modern electric appliances or the modern gas appliances in our kitchens, and we no longer have wood ashes. That's right, wood ashes. And Wallach points out that there are 92 nutrients that we humans need. We need 92 thingies in our diets, things like minerals and amino acids and proteins and so on. And if you don't have those, you come down with a symptom. And he's got a chapter in here, we'll cover it as we progress along, where he points out scurvy, for instance. He says scurvy is a vitamin C deficiency. Pellagra is a vitamin B3 deficiency. And he goes through about 10 or 12 of those. I'll cover those when we get to that chapter. And he's got another chapter in here, which is where I'm going to start off here with our story here. 92 vitamins, minerals, and amino acids here. The nutritional values. Well, the average loss of the nutritional value of our food, starting back in 1917 to 1937, the Congress of the United States commissioned a committee in 1937 that says, go out and take a look at our food and tell us what it compares to. So for the 20 years from 1917 to 1937, the food value, that is the vitamins and minerals in the food, decreased by 50%. Now that was in 1937, and Congress said, hey, we got to do something about our soils and food crops and things like that. They never did anything, but they said we need to do something. And I thought that was a hell of a report. Now get this, in 1917, we had 40% of our people now that had some kind of a disease symptom. Now let's go back a little earlier. In 1880, wheat coming out of Kansas had a protein value of 24%. Now nobody in our modern era today has ever heard of 24% protein wheat. The first time I ever heard somebody mention protein was up in Boise, Idaho. I called Hill City to place an order for some wheat. I needed a truckload of wheat, and so I called a broker and I said, hey, send me a truckload of wheat. And the guy says, what protein content do you want? The broker asked me that question. Caught me flat-footed. I'd never heard such a thing before. And so I said, what do you mean, protein content? He says, well, the protein content of wheat runs 7 to 13%. And he said, you know, 13% protein wheat costs, and he gave me the price. And he said, 7% protein wheat costs, and he gave me the price. I'd never heard of such a thing. So I think I bought the 13% protein wheat, and then I did a little research to find out, well, what's this guy talking about? And that's where I found out that wheat in Kansas in 1880 was 24%. But by 1975 or so, when I bought that load of wheat, it had decreased. And I was just dumbfounded. I thought, why would it decrease? What causes that to happen? Some years ago, about 1985 to 90 in that time frame over there, I had a guy come down here, hog farmer from the Isle. And he related to me a story. He said he had hogs up there that were healthy, great big fat strapping pigs. And they're walking around in the pen, they fall over and die. And so after a few of them died, they called the vet, and the vet came out, and they took them into the university, and they did autopsies on them. And they were feeding them a ConAgra ration, you know, high in corn. And the protein content of the corn was 6%. And they came to the conclusion the pigs were dying of starvation. They were big. They were healthy. They were fat. They looked good. But they just fall over and kick a little bit, and then they die. And they thought they had some kind of a wild new disease over here, and come to find out it was protein deficiency is what they were dying of. A pig cannot live on less than 8% protein. Now, the protein content of corn here in the United States is down around 6%. And so they have to boost that protein content, you know, they get into the feed mills. And then they boost it. Now, the way they boost protein content is by putting in the offal. This is called bypass protein. So they go over to the slaughterhouse, and they take the guts and the hide and all the crap, you know, that's just waste, and they take that in and they boil it up. And grind it up real good, and then they make a slurry out of it and dry it, and then they make a powder out of it, and this is high protein powder. And they put that protein, bypass protein, animal protein, in with this vegetable protein in the corn to raise the protein content in dairy feed, chicken feed, and various animal feeds. And then, of course, we discovered, well, that process causes mad cow disease. You know, so, you know, in this country, we have about 100,000 cows a year that just die in the feedlots. They call it Downer cow syndrome. In Great Britain, they call it mad cow disease. We're offended over here in this country from mad cow disease. And so what we do is we call it Downer cow syndrome. Now, we take those Downer cows that have what they call mad cow disease over in England. We call it Downer cow syndrome over here. Like, well, we don't know why the cow died, but it just died. Now, this mad cow disease doesn't manifest itself until an animal is 30 months old or older. Typically, it's 3 to 5 years old. So they kill these animals, you know, in the feedlots before they reach 3 years old. That way they never manifest the symptoms of mad cow disease, because we kill them before they can manifest those symptoms. Isn't that real bright? Just thought I'd let you know how that works. Now, Joel Wallach comes along and he writes this book called Hell's Kitchen. He says, here's what the problem is. The reason for all the sickness and disease in America is mineral deficiency. That's the bottom line. That's the simplicity of the book. And he said, the reason that we didn't have mineral deficiency prior to 1917 is because we had wood ashes. Nearly all Americans had wood ashes coming out of their kitchens, coming out of their fireplaces, coming out of their heating stoves. And when we started inventing things like electricity and gas stoves, you know, cooking gas and things like that, coal-fired stoves, we stopped burning wood. And when we stopped burning wood, we stopped having wood ashes. And then without the wood ashes, we lost the minerals. Now, here's a little ditty for you. I didn't know this until some years back, you know, but the guy came in, he said to me, he says, did you know the difference between colloidal silver and just plain silver? And I said, no, I don't. And he said, this colloidal silver is broken down into very, very tiny particles, molecule-sized particles. Now, silver is a mineral, and silver is a disinfectant. So if you take this silver and you use an electrical charge and run it through some silver in some water, you can actually watch the clouds, as there'll be a cloud of silver particles, ions, I guess they call it, coming off of the silver. And that silver is will kill bacteria. Bacteria can't live in the presence of that silver, so it's a bactericide. But here's a little something I didn't know. That silver that you take, colloidal silver, is not assimilable. Your body, your cells cannot assimilate that colloidal silver because it is not biologic in nature. It's mineral in nature. And I said, well, why is that? I mean, you can drink it. And he said, well, you do this. You can take a nail and you can grind it on a grinder, and then you can put that in some water and drink it. And your body will not be able to use that iron, although you're taking the iron directly into your body. And I said, oh, that's kind of strange. Why is that? And he said, because there's a process that plants. Now, a plant can take that same iron filing. You just throw a nail out in the garden, and it'll rust. And then the plants can take that and rust and assimilate that. And they turn that inorganic iron into organic iron. And then you eat the carrot or the rutabaga, and then your body can assimilate that iron out of the carrot or rutabaga, but not directly. So that's another little ditty that goes into this equation over here. You know, a lot of times people, they buy things from the grocery store, and it says vitamin fortified, vitamin D added, or vitamin this or that or something else, or iron added. And do you know where they get those minerals that they're putting in there that they're adding? Well, they're not biologically derived. They're chemically derived. And your body cannot assimilate those chemically derived minerals. So you may think that you're taking in these minerals. The package may say that it's got these minerals on. But it isn't. And that's another little ditty here that you'll pick up in Hell's Kitchen. This is why the wood ashes are so good, because you see, we used to take the wood ashes out of the fireplace and go throw them on the garden, or in any event, we'd throw them on the ground. And you can test this. I've done it here. I've got a. We use wood heat here, and so we have a lot of wood ashes. We put them on the garden. We put them out in the pasture. We put them everywhere. And you throw wood ashes out here on the ground, like out in the orchard, and when the cows get out, do they come up on the lawn or go into the orchard to eat? They go right straight to the orchard. And why is that? Because the grass must taste better, because it's got all of those minerals that are in the wood ashes that go into the soil, and the grass grows in the orchard. And the cows, they know that, and they go right straight over there. It's just like you. You know, you go into a store, and you go right straight to the candy counter. I mean, you know where the sweets are, don't you? So you run right over and pick up a York peppermint patty. So you know what tastes good. And if you put broccoli out here, you know, on a salad bar, and you put York peppermint patties out there, people take those peppermint patties 10 to 1 over that broccoli because they know what tastes good. Now, the difference between cows and humans is cows they like what they taste, and then what they taste is good for them. They're designed that way. I suppose humans might be the same, but we've perverted our taste buds, I guess, to such a degree now that we think that sugar is good for us and broccoli is bad. Cows don't. The cows, they get in the garden, they go right straight to the broccoli. They know what's good for them. So in olden days, we had plenty of vitamins and minerals in our foods because we grew our foods in our own gardens. But around 1890 to 1920, in that 30-year period, there was a great transition in America. It started a little bit before 1900. And in this transition, we started weaning ourselves from wood ash, and we got off onto a whole host and plethora of other modalities for cooking, and in the process, as a result of it, we no longer have the wood ashes. And starting about 1900, as you go from 1900 to 1917, we find that there's a decrease, you know, from about 1880 to 1950. In that period of time, 1880 and 1950, the average protein content of wheat in Kansas went from 24 to 18%, lost 6 percentage points. And then from 1950 to about 1975, it had decreased again in that 25-year period to 7 to 13%. Boy, that's a hell of a decrease, you know. When you're talking about 13%, that's half the protein in the wheat. Between 1880 and 1980, about a 100-year period, we've lost half the protein content of our wheat. Now, we go out here and we eat this wheat. See, we eat bread called the staff of life, and we think we're getting vitamins and minerals, and we used to. And Walk points out here in the book, he said, there isn't anybody in America that can get enough food value out of the food you're buying out of the grocery store to sustain life. Now, there's a lot of health food people out there that are trying to buy organic and natural foods, and you can do it. I mean, you know, if you put wood ashes out there on your garden, and then you use open pollinated seeds, and you use mulch, and you go out there and you work at it, you can create healthy, nutritious food. I mean, it's there. But that isn't what's being produced out here on the farms of California, you know, where they're raising carrots and broccoli and spinach, you know, on hundreds if not thousands of acres, and it's being done with chemical fertilizers and sprays and dyes and one thing and another. You're not getting nutrition out of that food. It tastes good. I don't deny that. You know, it tastes good. But it is lacking. And just like the pigs, I'm sure that the ConAgra ration must have tasted good to the pigs, but they were dying from starvation because there wasn't enough protein in it. And so Wallach points that out, that Americans are dying from starvation. That's what our problem is. We are dying from starvation. And the starvation is coming, and it had a point in time, about 1890, and it has become progressively worse, and it is worse today than it's ever been, and it's getting worse as time progresses along. It's ultimately going to kill most of us. I want to see if I can be one of those that can avoid that. All right, now with that background, let's take a break here, and then we'll come back with the nutrient values here right after this. You're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school or The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, then please go to our homeschooling site on our webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated every week. It has our radio log schedule and archives that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest, and The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and The Law Hour and editorial review gives credit to the authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse and recommend will reciprocate. Most of these authors and publications that we cite here on The Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by The Law Hour and editorial review. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or of this local radio station. Now, for more information about The Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website is georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, let's turn over here to page 211. Let me give you some values here for the decrease. If you want to know why it is you're sick, it's because you're being starved to death. Now, disease comes from two sources. You're either starving, you don't have enough vitamins, minerals, and nutrients. You're lacking in one or more of these 92 vitamins, minerals, amino acids, or proteins. Or you're being poisoned. You can be poisoned by smog. You can be poisoned by arsenic or some other toxic waste or material, some chemical, or some combination of the two. You may have both starvation and toxicity that's doing you. Now, we know that if you do nothing else, consuming 1,200 milligrams of calcium every day will reduce your risk of being overweight by 65%. So if you are overweight, if you'll give up 500 calories each day, that's one hamburger, and if you will consume 1,200 milligrams of calcium per day, you will double your rate of weight loss even without the need for exercise. All right, so here are some scientists. They go out here and they say, okay, let's take a look at what causes this. What causes obesity? Now, one of the ways that we use to deceive people is to flood the information market. What we do is we give you 15 things to choose from. As a salesman, we like to use the KISS principle, and we call it, we word it like this, keep it simple, stupid, K-I-S-S. So when you want to close a sale, you say to the person, do you want to pay by cash or check? And then you shut up, and then this person will think about that and say, well, I think I'll pay you with a check. Say, that closes the deal, because now he's agreed to buy. It's called the closing question. And we do the same thing when we're trying to deceive people, see? So if we want to deceive you, and you're on to me, and you're about to discover the truth, then what I do is I bombard you with so many choices that you're confused and you don't know what to believe. So, you know, I'm lying to you, and somebody else comes along and tells you the truth about my lies, and so now I've got to cover that up. And so this is what we call in law pettifoggery. We just bury you in information, in useless knowledge. And so this is done oftentimes in politics with spin, see? And so we'll come up here with a number of different solutions. So let's take a look at cancer. You know, what causes cancer? Well, cigarette smoking causes cancer. And then somebody comes along from the tobacco industry and says, well, wait a minute, that's not true. Bessie Balmortal smoked until she was 87 and died from a heart attack. She didn't die from cancer, and she smoked for 50 years. I can say that about my granny. See, my grandmother, she smoked from age 18 to 85, 67 years. And she died of a stroke. She didn't die from cancer. She didn't have lung cancer. So the tobacco industry, you know, they're telling you the truth. Now, the real truth of the matter is that cancer is caused by a number of different factors. Smoking is just one of the factors that causes cancer. It is true that smoking causes cancer, but the tobacco industry comes along and they point out that, well, lots of people, you know, got lung cancer and they never smoked in their lives. And that's true, too. That's because lung cancer isn't always caused by smoking. It's caused by other factors like smog in the air. All right. So what we do, though, is that we bombard you with a lot of information that's all true, but it overwhelms your senses and you're unable to arrive at a conclusion. That's what the bottom line is. Now, it is true that fat's caused by more than one facet or factor over here, you know. And of course, if you're overweight, you know, you sit there and you say to yourself, well, it ain't my fault. Well, here's what basically is causing it. See, in your stomach, if you're eating a nutritious diet and you got all the 92 minerals and vitamins, you won't be fat. In the areas of the world where you take a look at people that live to be 100, those people aren't fat. But one thing is common to all of the long-lived people, and that is they have a very mineral-rich diet. So they've got all the minerals, and they're not fat. And so this tells you a little something about that. And so researchers take a look, and they say, well, what causes that? Well, if you've got these minerals in your diet, you won't overeat. And Wallach has one chapter in here. It's called The Munchies, and it's called pica. And we notice this in livestock. You take calves, and you put them out here in the field, and you're feeding them well. Then they'll eat the boards right off the fence. Why are they eating the wood off the fence? Because they're mineral deficient. And so they need these minerals, and they go over here. Little children, there was a little girl one time, she'd go around the ashtrays, and she would eat the burnt matches, and she'd eat the ashes out of the ashtrays. We call this pica. Little kids run around, and they're eating the paint off of the walls, you know, in houses, and they get lead poisoning. See, people have been using lead paint, you know, for hundreds of years, never had a problem. Not until recent times. And the reason that your little children are eating the paint off the walls is because they're mineral deficient. And they're just doing like calves. They're just running around sticking everything they can in their mouths trying to satisfy a hunger that they don't know what's causing it. And, of course, the lead poisoning is simply a byproduct of that. And so what they're telling you is, well, what you need to do is get rid of that lead paint, see? It's okay for your kid to starve to death. There's no point in giving him minerals. Let him go ahead and eat the paint off the walls, but make sure it's not lead paint because we don't want him to get lead poisoning. Now, it seemed like to me it would make more sense if we would eat wood ashes. Now, these wood ashes that the little girl I'm telling you about was eating, she is eating the tobacco ash. Now, the tobacco plant, as it grows up, it takes minerals out of the soil. So when you're smoking these minerals. That's what you're doing. I don't know. It might actually do you some good to smoke these minerals. I can't tell you whether it is or not. But this little girl, she seemed to like these ashes. Now, it sounds kind of gross, you know. But our forefathers, they used to take ash, mix it with salt, and then put it on their food right at the dinner table. And Frank Roach explained it to me one time. He said, well, it's the strength. He didn't say strength. It's the strength. Strength, S-T-R-E-N-T-H, strength. The strength is in the vegetables, you see. So, now, of course, we didn't know about nutrients. We didn't use words like nutrients and vitamins and minerals because, you know, Joe Sixpacks, you know, are illiterate. And this is why we send you kids off to college so you can learn these big words so you can come back and bedazzle us, you know. But you see, even us Joe Sixpacks, when we were young people, we understood that there was something that caused the calves to eat the boards off of the corral. We didn't know what it was, but we knew there was something wrong. So along came the vet, and he said, well, because they're mineral deficient, they're eating the boards, and so give them a mineral block. Now, we give them a mineral block, and then they stop eating the boards, and they lick on the mineral block, which is why Joel Wallach says, see, what the problem is that you people are mineral deficient. That's why you need a mineral block on your dining room table. Instead of that flower pot, you know, with those worthless flowers, go down to the feed store, get yourself a mineral block, stick it on the dining room table, lick it when you go by, and it'll solve your pica problems and your kids. If you'll train them to the mineral block, they'll stop eating the paint off the walls. And it'll do another thing for them. Their hunger will be satisfied, and then they won't be constantly trying to eat things. You know, like potato chips. You know, you sit down to TV, you know, you feel a little hungry. And so, you know, I like to get a glass of milk and a bag of potato chips, and I sit there and eat the bag of potato chips and drink the milk, and I'm still hungry and want to eat dinner. Why is that? That's because there's no food value in the potato chips. Lots of calories, lots of oil, lots of fat, lots of everything to make you obese, but there isn't any food value. There aren't any vitamins and minerals in there. That's all been cooked out. You know, it tastes good. You know, it's got plenty of salt on it, you know, and it tastes real good. And potato chips, you know, they tell you very plainly, you know, you can't eat just one. That's because they put monosodium glutamate on it, which is a habit-forming substance, you know, and it tastes real good. And it's a deadly poison, but it tastes good. And, you know, if the poison tastes good, you'll eat it. And so we eat the potato chips. We're still hungry, and so we get the munchies. You know, I see people, you know, they'll eat a big Thanksgiving dinner, you know, and then they'll go open the refrigerator and start looking around and say, what are you looking for? I don't know. I don't know what I'm looking for, but I'm still hungry. I'm hungry for something. I don't know what it is. Now, if you want to test this theory that I'm giving you here, it's very easy. There's times, you know, when you really crave a banana. You ever notice that? Bananas are highly mineralized with potassium. So you eat a banana, and boy, that really tasted good. Now eat a second one, a third one, or a fourth one. You can't eat three or four bananas. they're too high in potassium. I can eat a banana in the morning on my cereal, and then maybe tomorrow morning I can eat another banana on my cereal, and then maybe sometimes even the third morning. But let me tell you, after about the third banana, the third morning, take them bananas away. I don't want to eat any more bananas. I don't eat any bananas maybe for 2-3 weeks. And then I'll get this hunger for banana. You know, you see a banana on the counter, and you say, "Wow, this looks pretty good. Let me eat one of those." And so maybe one or two or three, and that's about all you can take. Now those are highly mineralized fruits. Now if you do that, you know, like with strawberries, you know, you see strawberries, "Wow, well, that really tastes good." But you know, you can eat strawberries until they make you sick, and you start to vomit. Same thing with honey. So what it is that these foods have minerals in them, and you crave these minerals, you eat these foods until they make you sick, and then you stop eating them. Now, one of the problems with Americans is that we don't have enough vitamins and minerals in our foods. And here's what's happening to us over here. USDA Nutrient Database. In 1975, only when one looks at the USDA database and compares the level of vitamins and minerals in certain common foods between 1975 and 2004, do we truly understand how depleted our foods have become since we gave up backyard gardens and wood ashes. Now, here's something. If we take a look, I'm going to give you 4 or 5 here. This is on page 211, is probably 10, 23, about 40 items on here. Let's just take one. Apples. In 1973, the amount of iron in milligrams per 100 grams of apples was 0.3%. But by the year 2004, it had changed to 0.12. That was a 60% decline in the average amount of iron in an apple consumed in the United States of America, tested by the USDA. It lost 60% of its nutritional value. Blueberries, over the same period of time, 75 to 2004, about 30 years here, lost 72% of their nutritional value in iron. Onions, 62%. Tomatoes only lost 10%. Carrots lost 57%. Spinach lost 13%. Corn lost 26%. Peas lost 23%. Broccoli, 33%. Kale, 37%. Strawberries lost 58% of the iron that they normally had. Now, here's what's going on. We never practice land Sabbaths, and we use hybridized seed. Here in the Bible, let me give you a little Bible lesson here. Leviticus 19:19. There's a statute in Leviticus 19:19, and it says, "You shall not sow your fields with mingled seed. You shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle gender with a diverse kind. You shall not sow your field with mingled seed, neither shall a garment mingled with linen and woolen come upon you." Now, when we plant corn, we got about 247 varieties of common commercial corn that we plant here in the United States. And we're getting rid of those 247. I mean, we've got them, but we don't plant that many. We're going to monoculture here in this country because we've got chemicals and we've got schedules and one thing and another. But anyway, there's a lot of different kinds of corn out there. A lot of those corn types out there are hybrid seed. That is, that seed that will not reproduce. And it has lower food values to it. Lower food values. Let me give you an illustration here. A guy by the name of see if I can find his name here. Yeah, let's see here. Come on, I'm looking here at my ads. Here we go. Nope, tune in that section right there. Let me flip over here one more page. Adolf Steinbrom is the guy's name. And you've heard me do this a time or two. I'll put an ad in here, you know, Adolf Steinbrom. Let me back up here again. This business here, subsistence and survival. Adolf Steinbrom. Oh, come on. I guess I'm going to have to look it up and read it to you at another time because I can't put my finger on it right now for some reason. But I've told you this a number of times. Anyway, this Steinbrom, he tested his corn. And his corn would produce open pollinated seed. Now, his open pollinated seed corn would produce 75% more protein and 2 and 3 and 4 and 500% more iron and manganese and various other nutrients. Ah, here it is. Adolf Steinbrom of Fairbanks, Iowa, put the matter into perspective by having samples of corn tested for nutrients usually added to commercial feeds. Compared to more than 4,000 samples of hybrid corn tested in 10 Midwest states in recent years, Steinbrom's open pollinated corn contained 75% more crude protein, 875% more copper, 345% more iron, and 205% more manganese. And the same result has been seen in the content of calcium, sodium, manganese, and zinc. All right, now here's the point. God told us not to use hybrid seed. Now, of course, you know, Monsanto comes along and says, "Oh, no, that's nonsense. That's not scientific. That's religious." And so we use these hybridized seeds, and then they have less nutritive value. Nutritive value. Congress comes along, commissions a committee, and they go out and they test, you know, the corn, and they test the various foods like broccoli and tomatoes and strawberries and kale and broccoli and so on. Now get this: the average loss of vitamin A, vitamin C, calcium, and iron, which is what Joel Wallach is reporting here on page 211, is 52.5%. from 1975 to 2004. And why is that? Well, hybrid seed is one part of the equation. It's not the whole thing, but it's part of it. We're not fertilizing with wood ashes anymore. That's part of it. And we don't practice land Sabbaths or Jubilee years. That's another part of it. Now, when God designed this program over here, he showed us how to maintain soil fertility forever. I mean, we can grow food on land, and we can grow it forever and never have a nutritional deficiency. But it's not as profitable as using chemical fertilizers. No, I don't deny that. So if, you know, if you're a farmer and you're looking for more profits, Monsanto's got the answer. I don't deny it. But if you want nutrition in your food, then God has the answer and Monsanto doesn't. Now, if you want my opinion, instead of selling me corn by the bushel, you should sell me corn by the protein content. Now, I've got some corn here that tests 16%. It was Indian blue corn. Tested 16% protein. Now, some of you corn farmers out there are going to say, that Gordon lies a lot. Well, okay. The protein content in corn in this country, you know, it's kind of like wheat, like me, you know, if you're like I was. And some guy says, well, what protein content do you want, 8, 9, 10%? No, I want 16% protein. There's no such thing as 16% protein in corn. Not in this country. Now, you can produce it here in your home garden where, you, where you're putting in fertilizer and organics, you know, like Rodale, but you're not going to get it out here in the field where you're putting NKP on. Anhydrous ammonia and so on. That isn't going to happen. But you're going to get more bins and bushels. And so listen to this. In the opinion of many eco farmers, hybrid seed merely masks poor farming practices by producing bins and bushels of foodless food without the nutrients that are really food's reason for being. Boys and girls, the only reason for eating food is to get the nutrients out of it. And when you eat this food, foodless food, potato chips, you don't get the food value out of it because it isn't in there to start with. And when you get through, you're still hungry. And so you're eating thousands of calories a day and it's making you fat. But you're still hungry, and you've always got the munchies, and so you're always eating, always eating, always eating. Can't ever get filled up. And that's part of the reason now is because we don't have wood ashes to put out here on our gardens so that we can have fruits and vegetables that are coming in here that have nutrients in them, which shuts off our stomachs and says, hey, we're full. You can get it with a banana. And I go into the grocery store every once in a while, you know, and I'll buy some peaches or something like that. They're almost like buying I don't know, just cellulose. They're not sweet. They're green yet. And then when they ripen, they rot. I think they're irradiated is what they're doing to them. I think they're irradiating. So I just quit. I said, hell, this stuff isn't fit to eat. You know, the fresh fruits that are in Walmart? Well, once in a while, you know, you can get something that's tasty and still got some food value to it, but it's rare. I shouldn't say food value. I don't know how much food value is in it, but it's, you know, it's sweet and tastes good. All right, so now that's why I say this is a 1-in-100 book. You're not going to get another story like this from a nutrition book. And Wallach, you know, he's a mercenary. He sells these vitamins and minerals. He has a program. I'm going to recommend the Wallach program because he is one of the few guys around that says you need all 92 of these. And if you don't have them, you're going to develop some kind of an illness. And it's better for you to eat more than you need so that your body is always in surplus. And it's never short of iodine, never short of iron or vitamin A or vitamin B or something else. I think the guy's got a good point there. He says it'll cost you 50 cents a day. 50 cents a day. 365 divided by 50.50 is what? Cost you $182.50 per person per year. Rounded off to 200 bucks. Is it worth $200 a year? I think it probably is. Now remember in this chapter here, he said if you'll take calcium, how much calcium did he say you need to take? It was 500 calories each day. That's, you got to give up one hamburger. It's 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day. It'll reduce your risk of being overweight by 65%. Now, that's just calcium. What if you had the other 91 amino acids, vitamins, and minerals? And then take a look, boys and girls, just take a look, at the Hunza people or the people that live to be 100. Look them up on the internet. Do a Google search on longevity. And then take a look at the pictures that come along with them. There isn't one fat kid in there. Not a one. Now take a look at the children that are in your child's class in school. Maybe your kid's fat. Maybe you're fat. Just take a look at the pictures at how many are in there. When I was a kid in school in the 1940s, we had one fat kid in our second grade class. His name was Franklin. In the third grade, there were no fat kids. I don't remember one. I didn't see fat kids until I got to about the ninth grade. In the ninth grade, we had to go into gym class, and there was probably in our gym class, 50 kids. 50. And I would say there was five fatties in there out of 50. 5-10%. If that many, there might not have been five, might have been three, I don't know. I don't keep track of them, but you know, you're all in the shower, you're all naked, and you can see the fat kids. So I just wanted to point that out. Those kids were nutritive deficient. They didn't know it at the time. I didn't know it either. Not until I read this book by Wallach over here as to what's causing this. So obesity, 27% of us are fat. And the 27% that are fat are all starving to death. And all of you fat people out there, you're all starving. That's why you're overweight, because you can't control your appetite. You keep eating and eating and eating. And then you say, well, I'm cutting down on my calories. Well, okay. And then doing good, doesn't it? And so we got all these diets and all these fad diets and all this money that's being spent on diets and dieting over here. And the problem is you're starving to death. That's the bottom line. And so here's chapter 13, Size Does Matter, the Key to Cellular Fitness. Here on page 211, tells you what the nutritional deficiencies are. From 1917 to 37, we lost 50% of the nutritive value in our food. From 1937 to 1975, when this study was done, we lost 50%. And from 1975 to 2004, we lost 50%. So if you had an acre of corn in 1917, and let's suppose that that's our 100% mark, it produces 100 pounds of iron in an acre of corn. Between 1917 and 37, it lost 50%. So from 37 to 74, it's only producing 50 pounds of iron in that same volume of corn. And then from 1975 to 2004, lost another 50%. So 50% of 100 is 50. 50% of 50 is 25. And 50% of 25 is 12.5. We're down to 12.5 now. Not 100 pounds, down to 12.5 pounds. So we're starving to death. That's what the bottom line is, and that's why Joel Wallach's book is just pure dynamite. It's called Hell's Kitchen. Hell's Kitchen. And you can get a copy if you just call bravenewbookstore.com. Bravenewbookstore.com on the web. Tell them you want Hell's Kitchen. They'll set you up. Yeah, I'm about out of time again. So I'm going to have to remind you here that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the law school at 417-273-4967. Remember, it's free. CD package, 417-273-4967. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, we're out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.